Looking for a guiding hand in your Amazon business? Wizards of Ecom Academy is here for you. Our personalized support system includes unlimited email access to myself and my entire team to help you overcome challenges and strategize effectively. Sign up for an exclusive rate at wizardsofecom.com/academy. Your personal e-commerce coach awaits.
Welcome back to the Wizards of Amazon podcast, your weekly blueprint for explosive success. I'm Carlos Alvarez, full-time successful Amazon seller and organizer of the largest Amazon seller meetup group in the world. Let's do this. Welcome to the Wizards of Amazon podcast, where we cover all things private label. My name is Carlos Alvarez, and I will be your host for the show. On today's episode, we have an aspiring Amazon private label seller, Chris Cody. What's going on?
Good morning, Carlos. How are you, sir?
Awesome. We just went over the pronunciation of your last name, and then I'm right there at it. I'm like, oh, I don't know if you heard the pause.
No worries. Cody, C-O-T-E or C-O-D-Y is an easier way to remember it. Cody.
Awesome, Chris. We met how?
I was introduced to Gabriel, who's part of your crew, at a seller summit in Miami 2 years ago. He and I ended up in a mastermind session together. Befriended one another, had some things in common, and really enjoyed the conversation. You and I met out at a local bar that night, where I think you actually had a Wizard of Amazon meetup. So Brick, somewhere in downtown Miami, I forget the specific location, but you and I met there first. And then since then, I've been able to jump on some of your meetup calls, sitting in the back of the room, taking a lot of notes, has basically been my role. But that's how you and I came across paths.
Awesome. I knew about the Gabe connection. Yeah. I'm going to start calling him the full Gabriel now. He's going to love it. For anybody listening to this, it's at Paid by Amazon. Yeah, Gabe. We have to like message him after this and say, hey, you're going to be on the episode. But I knew Perfect. About the Gabe connection, and I didn't know, and now it's coming back to me. Yeah, it was one of Steve Chu's Seller Summit events in Fort Lauderdale. And yes, so for the networking happy hour, I would host an Amazon seller meetup down there. And the Zoom events you're referencing is now that we're hosting our events on Zoom during COVID.
Right.
Yeah. One of the huge pluses there, being able to have events in person and on Zoom, is the ability to meet a lot of amazing people like you.
Yeah. I mean, I commented to Gabe, at that point in time, I was traveling quite a bit, and I said, I'll definitely come down and catch a meeting on Saturdays. And then, you know, business changed, COVID came, but I was so grateful that I was able to start attending these via Zoom. So in spite of what COVID presented in every other aspect of my life, I wouldn't have found my way here today had it not been for these conditions and circumstances. So I think it's been an excellent opportunity.
Likewise. And speaking of being here today, I'm happy to say this is your first time guesting on a podcast, and you're handling it like you got the Morgan Freeman voice going, like you're doing great. Since other people have not had the privilege of knowing you or hearing your amazing voice on the podcast, can you introduce yourself? We're going to be jumping into like CPG and all this amazing stuff, but can you introduce yourself? Like what was your journey to Amazon like?
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate it. So I am, as I described, on the third leg of my three-legged stool career here. I originally lived in Boston. My first part of my career was in retail. So I was actually working for BJ's Wholesale Club, which has a presence in Southeast Florida. I was working in their corporate offices, doing a role around what we would call today consumer insights or shopper insights. We called it member insights at BJ's because obviously the membership card. So I was working in a strategy role there. I left that company 2007, and I hooked up with PepsiCo. So PepsiCo being the larger umbrella of a lot of companies that we're familiar with and brands in the CPG space. That role, after about 18 months, brought me to Chicago, where I've been since 2011 with my wife and son. I'm currently about 30 miles outside of Chicago. And from a PepsiCo perspective, it was an exceptional opportunity, met some amazing people, traveled around the world, literally touched a number of different corners of the world, learned quite a bit about brand, about innovation, consumer insights, market insights, et cetera. But after a while, it took a toll. We were traveling 3 out of 4 weeks of the month, and it was to places like Sao Paulo, Shanghai, Eastern and Western Europe, et cetera. It wasn't, you know, wasn't necessarily around the country. So that took a toll for a while, after which I left PepsiCo in 2016, I think. And I took some time off. So I basically said, hey, you know what? I need to kind of replenish, regroup, recharge, spend some time with my son, who was 5 or 6 at the time. And about a year after that, I got bored out of my tree. And I kind of made two decisions at that point. I made a decision that I wouldn't go back to corporate and I would never retire. Like, I don't understand how I could just sit around and golf or whatever. I mean, that's fun and whatnot. So I, from there, from that position, I decided I got to try something, and I kind of migrated towards Amazon. There's a little bit of a zigzag story between there, but that's where I ended up. I ended up selling Amazon retail arbitrage. And I've graduated a little bit to that, sourcing wholesale. But I'm at, as I said in the beginning, I'm at the beginning of my third stage of my career. And my goal here is to have some success in what I would describe as a larger umbrella of e-commerce.
Oh, thanks for sharing that. You know, you, something that I don't feel like enough people talk about is the experiences one has before they are introduced to Amazon and start selling them and start selling on Amazon, and how that really influences or shapes their path on how they approach Amazon. Like, for somebody that is just a video nerd and they're constantly creating videos, they could crank out 3 amazing videos per day. They have YouTube experience working at another company. For them, if they were going to start a private label product, it would make all the sense in the world to leverage that powerful experience that they have for their successes. What experiences do you feel you brought to the table in your Amazon business when you started? And can you clarify a little bit as to what your current Amazon business looks like?
Yeah, of course. So let me start with the current Amazon business. That's a little easier to describe. And then I can back up to my experiences with probably CPGs, the most relevant. So I started Amazon, like I mentioned, doing retail arbitrage. And I've since graduated, I've got my quotation fingers up, to wholesale. So what I do today now is I work with small niche brands, $5 to $10 million total enterprise, right? So these are the folks that are trying to break into Walmart, or trying to break into a Kroger, understanding they have to have some sort of an Amazon presence, but don't have the time nor the inclination or the knowledge to do it. So with a little bit of experience that I've had, my understanding of how CPG works, I'm filling a little bit of a gap for them to say, hey, I can manage your store. I'll take care of that for you. And in return, you'll sell to exclusively to me for your e-commerce needs. So I've started a little bit of a business around that. I have 4 brands that I'm working with now. And I'm kind of like pushing people off because it's not easy to scale the way it is. So I'm trying to navigate that piece a little bit. But that's effectively my role in Amazon today. My goal, and where I think I have a little bit more of a strength based on my experiences, which I'll circle back to, is I'd like to get into private label. I think there's a huge opportunity around this notion of brand, around finding niches and or sub niches inside of Amazon where you can own a space. So some of the experiences I had at CPG, I think, complement that, right? So the role I was in a global strategy role was we were charged with basically building a number. We were trying to get to a value of sales, but we were charged with identifying new markets, in this case, countries, new consumers, and new needs to satisfy pain points, what we used to call pain points for them, right? So understanding what the consumer segment is, understanding how they shop today, understanding what the competitive context is. So how are they solving for their issue today? And then designing innovation around that under the notion of this brand halo that we would have in some of the brands that we worked with. That's very similar, my observations, to what folks are trying to do on Amazon today, right? You're trying to find a niche. You're trying to do it a little bit better than the other folks you're listing against. And you're trying to use whatever assets you have in the form of brand or other to kind of beat your competition. So there are parallels, certainly, to the two roles. The scale is obviously very, very different, right? And with that comes some pain points for me. You don't have access to a lot of the tools you had before. It's not easy getting data. But the flip side of that is you can be much more strategically agile. You can make quick decisions, learn quick, fail fast. And you don't have a lot of stage gating and approvals and whatnot to go through. So there are parallels unquestionably to how CPGs operate and how to develop and design a parallel, a private label on Amazon. The notion of the two paths are different in the sense of their volume and their scale, I would say.
Definitely a difference in scale.
Yeah, no doubt.
I want to make a confession here. And it's something I've never shared this before. I don't think I've told my wife. I don't think I've told anybody. And that is when I first started selling, again, barely got my GED, dropped out of elementary school. Like, just, I think we have complete opposite paths as far as education when we started. I got lucky and sold a business, and I was around other people that I guess had money and they were educated and they had these 401k like jobs. And people would say stuff like my CPG company, and we're in the same vertical, and they would use these terms, and I would just nod. It was sort of like somebody that didn't speak a language, and you just smile and you nod when they say something. And I just had I didn't have the foggiest idea. So just in case there is somebody listening to this that is currently in the same position that I was and has no clue what a CPG is, can you break down that? Because we're going to be saying that term a lot.
Fair, yeah. Yep. So a CPG is shorthand acronym for consumer packaged goods company. All right. I'll give you a couple broad examples of folks that everybody will recognize. Coca-Cola is a CPG. Samsung is a CPG. PepsiCo is a CPG. PepsiCo owns, probably 40 brands, right? Everything from Mountain Dew to Tropicana, Frito-Lay Doritos, et cetera, et cetera. So those are CPG companies, consumer packaged good companies. Those are the folks, effectively, when you walk into center store at a Walmart, that's what you see very prevalent up and down the aisles are CPG companies.
Okay, perfect. I wish I would have known that many, many, many moons ago in these networking events where people were just throwing this around and vertical this. And then I was just like, oh man, I am so not, cut for this.
So in fairness, and in the interest of truth and full disclosure, I turned to someone at a conference a year and a half ago and said, could you explain what a 3PL is? Because right? I had no idea what that was.
Okay, we're even.
We've all got some confessions.
Definitely. Tough question. With Amazon, there's a lot of different ways to approach this and be successful. But for you and with your past experience, and I'm assuming this past experience in the CPG company specifically is going to really determine your answer to this. Do you prefer getting into a private label product or brand that is very inch wide, mile deep, as far as like extremely niching down, or more of a mile wide, inch deep? You sell shower curtains, adult novelties, coffee products, everything. What's your take on that?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So I'm going to preface it with acknowledging your listeners, right? It depends what their goals are, right? So I have a point of view on this. I'll offer that in just a second. If your goal is to have an Amazon store that's just creating perpetual revenue, right? Some sort of an annuity, if you will. You don't intend to sell it. You're not looking to grow an e-commerce outside in another channel. A mile wide and inch deep might be okay, right? You've got 100 hero items, as we used to call them, that are doing the type of volume that you're wanting. If your goal is other, meaning you want to design brands that you can sell into a Costco, a Dick's Sporting Goods, an HEB, a Publix, then my recommendation and the path that I'm going to take would be narrow and deep. And the reason why narrow and deep is important is because especially when you're starting, your ability to use your brand and subsequently your brand halo becomes very, very important as you think about innovation, i.e. adding SKUs or adjacency categories. And we can unpack that a little bit, but net, narrow and deep is probably the best way to go. And a great example of why that's important is recently in the news, Coca-Cola, right, just cut 200 brands from their portfolio. So they were a mile wide and inch deep. They were covering more segments than they could handle. And I think what's important to remember in that scenario is every one of those brands, there's a new mouth to feed, right? Or there's a new headcount to manage, or there's a new PPC campaign to you know, moderate, et cetera. So Amazon cut their portfolio in half, literally in half for all their brands. My sense is they got too wide, and they're now focusing on their core competencies.
I hadn't heard about, you say, so Coca-Cola cut 200 brands from their portfolio?
Yeah, Coca-Cola announced late October that they're cutting 200 brands from their portfolio.
Oh, and they haven't announced which brands they're going to be cutting.
Not as of yet. They cut a couple last summer. So they cut Odwalla, which was a juice drink, a vegetable juice drink. They cut Zico, I think, which was a water beverage. And there was another one, that a brand I didn't recognize when I read the article. But they announced in late October they're cutting 200 brands. Tab was one of them that they're going to end up cutting. Go ahead.
And what? Where does the benefit come in there? I think I know the answer, but I'm going to defer to what your expertise says. So, like, what you gave an amazing example. Also, maybe it'll complement this one in the Zoom networking event we did, where I think you mentioned Quaker required a certain X percentage of an ingredient across all products. Do you feel that Coca-Cola cutting 200 brands from their portfolio was sort of because they didn't do that? They strayed too far?
My sense is that, so in the beverage business, it's a horizontal evaluation of categories, right? Or what we would call segments. All right. So there's like refreshing, there's morning, there's hydration, et cetera, et cetera. My sense is, as they looked at their core competencies, right, said, all right, where's the growth? Where's the expense? Where are we putting our time? And where do we think we can win share? And subsequently, how much would it cost to gain share and gain growth, et cetera? They probably evaluated some of these segments, these verticals, if you will, and said, you know what, we don't want to win here anymore, right? It would be disproportionate cost for us to have any gains. So that's my sense of what Coca-Cola is doing, just based on having been in the business for a while and understanding how the cola wars and the beverage wars work. From a Quaker perspective, to kind of flip that on its head, from a Quaker halo, so Quaker is the Quaker Oats company based here in Chicago, right? So the oatmeal that you're familiar with, Larry is the logo. They play in the morning, right? So they're a morning brand, right? Their halo is about nutrition. It's about goodness. It's about heart health. They feel they have permission, rightly so, to push and extend that out into other segments. So a segment here might be an adjacent category, a nutrition bar, as an example, or a snack bar. They feel like they have that because they have ownership and they have equity and efficacy around that brand and around that day part, right? So the morning, in such a way that they feel that if they innovated in an adjacency like that, it's within their halo, that they can get good rub off, if you will, of their master brand. You won't find, as an example, you know, giving extremes up, you won't find Quaker innovating at nighttime or, you know, post dinner snack or post dinner beverage, right? They have no equities there. So they're going to stay within their core competencies, i.e. morning day part, wholesome, nutritious, and they're going to innovate as fast and as far as they can around that space.
Wow. Taking this to the private label, what would be some good examples there? Maybe we could mess around with some of mine. And watch, at the end of this, you're going to be like, Carlos, you suck. You know? But like outside of my Live Insect brand, which is very unique, the majority of the rest of my products that I've just been extremely successful with are in the ceramics space. And let's say, you know, cheese boards and just all kind of, you know, ceramic stoneware type of stuff. Yep. Would that be fair to say, really, that's my ceramics is more of my ingredient, and I'm more, since it's a cheese board, it's more in like the appetizer sub or like post meal niche. Because yep. That now that you say that, that is where all of my products technically fall, is in that post meal area.
Are your products branded? You have to put a brand, but are
absolutely.
They branded?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so they're branded. Yeah. So again, absent of tipping the sand a little bit here, there's a lot of ways where you can look at where you can innovate and where you have permission to innovate, right? And you'll hear me throw out segments or horizontals or verticals. They're all just spaces, right? Day parts is another nomenclature for these types of opportunities. You could look at your space in a couple of different ways. You could look at your spaces as, are you hitting a sweet spot for a consumer profile, right? So I'm completely making all this up. Two-income household with two kids that like to entertain, that will pay a little more for a quality product, right? That's a loosely interpreted consumer segment, right? And if that's the case, and you have a clear understanding of who that consumer is, you could infer that your brand would allow you to give them something for the morning occasion, right? So you're not necessarily innovating on a day part in that scenario. You're focusing on what the consumer likes. I like higher end. I like, you know, quality made. I like the brand, et cetera, whatever the brand resonance and efficacy is. Another way to think about this is you could focus on day part, right? Just like you're describing, where after dinner entertainment is your space to innovate, right? So what does that mean? I mean, that could mean plates, you know, that could mean the stuff that sits on the table. That could be the complementary pieces that are on the table. It could be colors, like colors and different fabrics or different types of materials in an after dinner space. I think that space is probably a little wider, a little more opportunity for you. If you think about, I am going to innovate in after dinner entertainment. I'm generalizing the opportunity here. But as long as you're delivering on your core competencies and your efficacy for the brand that you have now for the ceramics, you'll have permission to extend out into those spaces. They'll recognize you for delivering quality here. Why wouldn't I go with something over here? Is that fair?
I was on mute. Sorry about that. No, I saw you panic. You're like reaching up for anyone not watching, like, oh, you thought it was your headset. No, I can see that. You know, I've not looked at it that way, but now taking a step back and looking at that seems to be exactly what happened. And as we really built our base in a specific, you know, sub niche, we mm-hmm. then looked at others that still fell into, let's just call it, you know, the post meal. Yeah. And we looked for what else was there, because otherwise we would not have looked at that to start. But that's pretty amazing. So on Amazon, you know, I'm assuming you have not picked your private label product yet.
I have not picked my space yet, to be candid with you. And that's something I'm struggling with. A couple of the questions that I've brought to you during the Zoom calls is, I come from a space of data, right? So give me the data so I can analyze it, or give me something I can analyze. I find that trying to analyze an Amazon portfolio or a store, if you will, is a lot harder. The data is not readily available. So I'm struggling with that a little bit. There's other ways around that, but net, I haven't picked my space yet. And I'm completely open-minded to anything that's available.
Sure. And fortunately now they have a ton of tools, which you know, and I'm sure listeners, you know, the Helium 10, Viral Launch, yeah. Jungle Scout, all those tools that'll really give you really all of the data that Amazon is going to share to help you make an informed decision. When you do pick your product and your niche, like how do you feel like you're going to approach that from what you've learned in your other companies? Do you feel like you're just going to say, oh, well, you know, whatever Helium 10 says, and then I'm just going to sell that one product? Or are you going to give some thought as to the complementary products in that niche that could go with it later?
Yeah. So my plan is the latter of the two that I described earlier. I don't think I want an Amazon portfolio of hero brands, because I don't think there's an end game to that, or I don't think there's an easy extension to that. I wholeheartedly feel like I'm going after a portfolio, right? So some 20, 25 SKUs, if you will, around the brand, and perhaps, you know, some of the adjacency categories. What I will do is, I'll determine the means by which to niche down, right? I don't know what that is yet. Jungle Scout, Helium 10 are probably the tools that I'll use. You gave a great recommendation during the call. If you don't remember, you said just go into the store and stand in front of a category.
Yep.
Right? Go bay by bay and ask yourself what you know, what you think you could do better. So that's what I'll do. I'll end up with some sort of a category or subcategory. My goal is, you know, in the next 30 to 60 days. And the way I'll innovate is, and I don't know which tier I'll take yet, but we did this quite a bit at PepsiCo, and I think this will benefit the listeners as well. So you got these segments that you're working within, day parts, verticals, et cetera. It's all the same language. So you're after dinner. And I'll look to a stratosphere of the category itself, right? So, and I'll characterize the products out there today as good, better, and best, okay? And depending on who's playing where and how I think they're delivering, obviously where the margins are and so on and so forth, I'll pick a space within that category that I think I can own. My sense is, if you just looked at today, Amazon Basics, probably good, right? Maybe better, right? Maybe not quite best, right? There's a lot of folks out there that are selling high quality products with a great brand, great materials. I wouldn't necessarily characterize Amazon Basics as that. They're more of the Walmart, if you will. So could I go better or best in some of those categories? I think so, right? And how you compete in that is the quality of the materials, the branding that you use, the colors that you use, the efficacy that you're promising the consumers, et cetera. And that's just a little forward looking. I don't know how that applies necessarily to the category I'm going to end up in. I'm just not there yet.
Cool. That's fair. Just curiosity. So when you do pick your brand and you decide to sell it, and with your previous experience and with the CPG, what would off Amazon look like for you? Is there any experiences or exercises that you went through in your previous career that you would apply here?
So you're talking about other channels. Is that right? Yeah.
Other channels, social media, email marketing, content creation, branding.
Yeah. I mean, I think D2C, if you're going to play today, and a lot of brands are building themselves on Amazon and direct to consumer. So D2C, forgive me. I think you have to play there today, right? There's a company out there that just a startup called Italic. So it's kind of like the font that you find in your Microsoft applications. They're basically taking manufacturers and selling directly to consumers in the US, European manufacturers direct to consumers. So I think there's undoubtedly a trend heading in that direction. So I feel like you'd have to have some sort of a direct-to-consumer component. I view social and some of the other tools as marketing inputs to that, right? So, depending on where your consumer plays, let's assume you have a little bit of a higher-end consumer. That probably means Instagram more than it means Twitter, as an example, right? So I think where you design your brand, the adjacent tools that you use to promote it are going to be complementary to whoever your end target is or what the brand efficacy is that you want to deliver to the consumers. I'm fearful is probably a strong word. I'm hesitant to start selling into brick and mortar. I grew up there, right? I grew up there from a retail perspective. I sold into there, if you will, from a CPG perspective. And I understand it. It's high volume, low margin. You're dealing with, 100 different people that make different decisions about your product. If you're selling across retailers, it's just a harder sell, than if you were to try to directly engage with your own consumers, via a Facebook group or whatever the case may be. I feel like it's probably a little easier. If I were to pick retailers, I'd probably go volume first or something that's complementary to the brand that, or the category that I'm going to play in. Crate and Barrel versus, a dollar store, as a simple example.
Awesome. Last question. This just came up with something that you just said now. When you were with PepsiCo and these other companies you're mentioning, it seems like only God has more money than them. So how do you approach marketing and advertising? Just keep spending, and when we hit that number, we'll know. Whereas now, you're not going to have those as deep, I'm imagining, pockets as PepsiCo. How are you thinking about, what would you not do because budget doesn't permit, and what would you double down on?
That's a fantastic question. So let me preface it with larger budgets come larger expectations, right? PepsiCo's when I left was about a $60 billion company. Wall Street expected 3-5% annual growth, so that's almost $2 billion in growth, right? Every year. So you had a budget to spend, right? You had margin to there's margin baked into those categories. You had the money to spend, but it's a very, very tough deliverable, right? Like, think about it. You're gonna come up with $2 billion every year. That's a high mark. That's a high watermark. I think down at the lower level at a private label, the expectations certainly aren't as high, right? The growth is going to be probably stronger, but the spend is not going to be as much. I think the closer you can get to your consumer, the better value you're going to spend, you're going to get on your dollar, your return on your dollar. So if that means, you know, a Pinterest, or if that means your own, as I mentioned before, Facebook page, blogging, I don't know if that plays a role necessarily in the categories that you're in or where I'd end up. But the long and the short of it is, the closer you are to that consumer, the better ROI you're going to get. If you've got to go through three or four channels to get to them, for example, buying an end cap at Walmart in 3,000 locations, right? Which is a very real proposition for a CPG. You're counting on your consumer to be walking in that week to go by that aisle specifically to see your new product. And you're trying to convey every message about that new product to them in a matter of 5 seconds or less. It's a hard proposition to deliver on. Whereas if you're a new brand and a new consumer and you have a base of folks that you can speak to and that'll listen to you and advocate for you, I think the money and the return is going to come a lot easier in those types of situations. So the scale in that case works to your advantage.
Chris, solid gold, man. You totally lived up to expectations on this. I want to be super respectful of your time. We covered a lot, and I feel like each point that we spoke on, we could have dove a lot deeper, but for time's sake, I wanted to, I wanted to cover what we did. Can you share any contact information that anybody listening to this could reach out to you on? Because you don't have an agency yet. You have nothing to sell people, nothing like that. There's a ton of experience that can help people out. Like, how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Chris Cote, last name Cote. PepsiCo is my last posted career there, so that's easy enough to find. Or feel free to email me. So it's my last name, Cote, in Chicago. So Cote in Chicago at Gmail. And I'm always looking to network and happy to help wherever I can.
Awesome. I'll have that LinkedIn, the profile link for your LinkedIn and your email in the show notes. Chris, before you escape and go on with your day, the question I like to ask all guests who are on the show, being an avid reader like I am, what was your favorite book you've ever read and why?
So I've got quite a few business books that I like to read. I enjoy, there's a book out there about business model creation. It's a template. I use that quite a bit. But interestingly, and the time of year, it's appropriate. I've got a book here called One Word. Right. So this isn't a business book necessarily. It's by a gentleman named John Gordon, J-O-N Gordon. And it's effectively a book about, like, how do you want to focus on? What's the one thing you want to focus on this year? And could you distill that down into one word? It's a very quick read. You could probably read in about an hour or two. And I've gotten into a little bit of a habit. I'm hoping we're able to do it every New Year's Eve. My son and I read the book. And in the book, we write down what our word for the year is. And we try our best to reflect on it halfway through the year and so on and so forth. So we'll actually read that book, this book, One Word, this weekend. And I'm looking forward to spend a little time with my son to talk about what's his one word going to be for 2021.
That's awesome. So you read that book every year, or this is the book every you're year. Reading this year?
I read this book every year. Every New Year's weekend, I read this book. It's, whatever, 45 pages.
And you've been doing this for how long?
Well, let's see. We've got 3 years in here now. So we inscribe in the front of the book. We inscribe in the front of the book what our one word for the year is. So he's 15. So we've been doing it since he was 12.
That is awesome. That's amazing. Having a son and a daughter, I'm hoping to, adopt those same customs with them. Yeah. So I'm going to grab this book as soon as we end this here.
Great.
Chris, again, huge thank you for being on the show. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope everybody listening to this enjoyed it. And I will let you go here. I hope to be talking to everybody again next week. Chris, you're amazing.
I appreciate the support. Thanks for having me.
Liked what you heard and want to stay connected? Join our Facebook group or find me anywhere on social media at Wizards of Amazon, or text the word Amazon to 69922.